Peter.
On Shavuot, there was a shiur given here by Moshe David Schwitzer on general aspects of security, relating to spies of the Mossad and the various dinim involved when there's danger to life. We're going to deal with just one specific aspect of national security today, and the shiur was a very specific one, emerging from an occasion in 1986 when a young lady called Cheryl Bentov gave herself the nickname Cindy, and she lured Mordechai Vanunu out of this country to Rome. He was the one who blew Israel's, or some of Israel's, secrets about nuclear weapons to the Sunday Times newspaper. And Israel was worried that he might reveal more, and they wanted him on trial. And yet, nevertheless, the Mossad did not want to arrest him on British soil. In fact, he met Cindy in Leicester Square. Shimon Peres, who was the foreign minister at the time, did not want to offend Margaret Thatcher and do anything like kidnapping someone on British soil. So Cindy lured him to Italy. And from there, where she said to him, I've got a flat, or my sister has a flat in Rome, and we can be more intimate there, and the Mossad cushed him and shipped him over to Israel to stand trial, and he got 18 years in prison, and he's still under surveillance now. So the question is, to what extent can a Jewish woman do things in order to save Jewish lives? Because there is a din that when it comes to the subject of Gil Arroyos, immorality, idolatry, or murder, then one should be prepared to give up one's life rather than transgress. Now, I'm not suggesting that Cindy herself did any actual transgression. In fact, there is an official line of the Mossad that the spies do not go that far. But when I use the word intimate, given that we have a family audience, I think people will understand exactly what I mean. The official line of Mossad is flirting's fine, but they do not cross any red lines. And the CIA have a similar rule with their spies, but that's all official. Whether other things happen behind the scenes, I don't know. But the halacha question is, to what extent may a woman in such circumstances break these rules in order to save not one life, but many lives? Indeed, we're talking about Klal Yisrael generally, the whole Jewish people. And when I told people about this subject, they said, Queen Esther. Their first reaction was, Queen Esther, she compromised herself halakhically to marry King Ahasuerus in order that she could save Klal Yisrael. However, she was in a situation where she felt really forced. Do we say that Cindy was forced? Anyway, we got a honey trap, as it's called, in this week's Parsha, Parsha's Moloch, when the Benos Moab are tending us with the Milchemes Midyon, when Balak and Bilam realize that the way to get the Jews to transgress, or to get them away from inheriting Eretz Yisrael, is to get God to be angry with us, and then to send the Benos Moab, and to send them as what you'd call honey traps. And we find the same similar story with Samson and Delilah. And there is another story with Yoel and Sisera, when there was a what you'd call a honey trap, and we'll be looking in depth at the story of Yoel as well. Queen Esther, as we know, Gemara Megillah Gimel, it says of the most of Yovimon Lekocha Mordechai Lo Levas, and the Gemara Darshan Al Tikri Levas Ela Laboyis, which means that although Esther we was regarding as a cousin of Mordechai, she was also the wife of Mordechai. And if that is indeed the case, then Esther was an Eshes Ish and certainly forbidden to any other man. In the subject of Yael and Sisera, sometimes called Yael, there in Shoftim, Hashem told Devorah that she will deliver Klal Yisrael from Yovin. She called Barak to get the army along, and he asked her to come with. She agreed to come with, but she prophesied that the killing of their captain, their main man, Sisera, would be by another woman. And what happened was that when Sisera was fleeing, Yael invited her in invited him, sorry, with apparent hospitality to the tent. She gave him milk to drink, but the Gemara explains that she seduced him 7 times in order to weaken him until he fell asleep exhausted, and she took the tent peg and with a mallet hammered it right through his head so deeply that it entered the ground as well. And the Shiras Devarot extols Yael, the wife of Chover, in chapter 5 of Shoftim, and praising her, and the Gemara praises her as well. So if she's praised, and she wasn't in a situation where you'd say she was honest, where she was forced, how do we understand this, the halacha? Were they right, or were they wrong? And these are the questions which are addressed by a very interesting article by Rav Avi Ari Yitzchok Shavat in Tachumin, volume number 30, which was published 2 years ago, and his heading is Gil Areos Leman B'tochon HaMedinah, the subject of immorality in order to ensure security of the state. What is the issue involved? Is it allowed or isn't it allowed? Is it right for the Mossad to set up such circumstances where there are these compromises in halacha? All right, you might say to me that many Mossad spies are not shomrei halacha, but nevertheless, the country is moving very, very much more towards the halachas of Torah, and we have to address these questions as though they apply to anybody. The Gemara Megillah Tesvav says, "Ashelo Chados Shabachol Yom Vayom Adashov Baones." That they came to stage with Esther that she did do something more willingly, namely she wasn't simply forced. So is the view of the Gemara that they reached a stage where she was no longer forced, but she was willing to be there for Achashverosh in order to win him round, so to speak. The Chashelvadati of Odati, it says in the Gemara, Kashem Shelvadati Mibes Abba Kach Oved Mimcho. So she was saying to Mordechai that just like I've lost out from my father's house, so I've lost out also from you. What does that mean, says Rashi? Vasurani Loch, I'm now forbidden to you, Mordechai. Why? The Ashes Israel Shenen saw a woman who is forced Muteres the Bala. The halacha is that a woman who is raped is allowed back to her husband. But if she is willing participant of Surah Labala, then she's no longer allowed back to her husband. And she was saying to Mordechai, I'm no longer allowed back to you, which implies that she was doing things Baratzon as well as Baones.
Yes, that happened when Mordechai told her to go willingly.
Yes, that's correct. So do we say that she was nevertheless a situation of onus, or do we say she was Baratzon? According to the Drosha of the Gemara, she was then Baratzon. So there are different opinions as to whether Esther was really married as guarding that drosha, but Yoel is described as Ashes Hever Hakeni. She was definitely called an Ashes Ish, and there are some who are of the opinion that maybe Hever Hakeni wasn't Jewish, but most opinions hold that they were from the family of Yisro, they were all converts, and she was 100% Jewish. On the subject of Yoel, the Gemara in Nozich Chaf Gimel, and there's a similar Gemara in Harayos in Yevama, says Omar Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Yitzchok Gadol Avera Lishmo Mimitzvah Shelo Lishmo. Maybe, but she says she's described as the wife of Chaver Hakeni, which implies maybe
could have been in Riyah, but
yes, but no, most opinions are that she was a 100% Jewish woman. So, well, the issue is then, was she justified in what she did? Because with her, there was certainly no force. She stood at the gate of her tent and offered hospitality to Sisera to come in, saying that she'll feel him welcome, she'll make him feel welcome and help him hide from those who were chasing him. Now, the Gemara there says, Gedor Avero Lishmo, that an Avero, which is done Lishmo, what does Avero Lishmo mean? That one mustn't do Averas, but she did it in service of Hashem. She did it for good reasons. And that is praised, and it's greater even than a mitzvah shel Lishmo. So what does it mean? So the Gemara there refers to Shoftim Perek Hei, and there's a pasuk which says, Tavarach Minoshim Yoel Eishes Chaver Hakeni Minoshim Ba'al. What does that pasuk mean? That she is praised, Yoel is praised over and above the other women of the tent. Who are the other women of the tent? Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. So Yoel is praised even more than Sarah of Korach and Aneah. And she was not fooled, but she was doing this to save Klal Yisrael. In order to weaken him, and she killed him with the tent peg. So as far as Esther is concerned, the Gemara in Sanhedrin Ayin Dalet says, Abaya Esther Karka Olopi. Esther, we say, was passive. She had a very passive role. She was just there. She was called Karka Olam, like the ground. The ground doesn't move, and therefore we can't blame Esther. In fact, if you look at the Neginus, the musical notes in Megillas Esther, we once discussed musical notes, and there it says, first, when all the other girls were going before Ahasuerus, it says, it's got a Kadmah v'Azlo. Naro v'Naro. Kadmah v'Azlo means they were chapping. They were willing to go forward. They wanted to meet the king. They wanted to be chosen as queen. But Esther, it's different. It's got a munach. Uvahagiyatar. Esther basa v'chayil. So she was holding back. Munach means to rest. She didn't want to go to Ahasuerus. She was forced. Karka olopi. But Yael, how do we explain it? She was not forced, and nevertheless, she's praised. And as Tosfos and Sanhedrin Ayin Dalet says, you know, if she would have been regarded as forced, then what's the point of praising her? Obviously, she did this willingly. So according to the Sreda Eish, Rabbi Hillel Yaakov Weinberg, he writes that even if Esther did play in part an assertive role, we still regard her as passive. We still regard her as Karka Olam, because the overall picture was that she did this unwillingly and she did it to save Klal Yisrael. So there's a bit of machlokis about this. If she did a mitra, can she be called Karka Olam or not? But Yoel, there's no question, surely. She was voluntary. So the Ma'arik writes, even though she was available, she never actually seduced Ahasuerus, and therefore we can say she was still passive. But nevertheless, there is still the question of Yarog Valyaro. Was this all justified? So the Meiri writes in Sanhedrin that there is a distinction between saving an individual and saving Rabbi. Whether you're saving just one person or saving many people. And with her, it was the Hatzil Kama Bakama Nefashos Misrael. I mean, with Esther, it was Mehodu Vaz Kush. It was 127 countries. In fact, it was the whole Jewish population of the world. So the Shlis Yaakov has a tshuva in Chelek Beis, Chim Kuf Yud Zayin. He wrote about 300 years ago. And he spoke about a Shaila put to him about a group who were at a hotel. And there were a group of people, he doesn't say how many, but it sounds like there were maybe 10 or 12 people. And in that hotel, there were bandits who were known to kill people who were in their midst to get them for their money. And they were ruthless and vicious. And people were very afraid. So there was one woman, very good looking woman in the party, a Jewish woman, a married Jewish woman, who said to her husband, look, you know, if I use my talents and distract the leader of the gang, maybe we might all be saved. And with her husband's permission, based on the shul of the Ma'arik in Siman Kuf Samad Zayin, she seduced the leader of the gang and distracted them, and as a result, all of them did not get harmed. So the question is asked by the Shvus Yaakov, was this justified? So he quotes the Ma'arik that Esther did a mitzvah, Rabba Ma'od. He quotes the oil, Sheshokha HaKosuv, that the Pasuk praises her. So he says, Afilu hi eshes ish. The Ma'arik says, Kedei lahatzil kol Yisrael. She did this to save all Yisrael. But Tosfos have an expression in Kesuvos Daf Gimel, Kedei lahatzil Yisrael, in order to save Yisrael, without the word kol. So the Shvus Yaakov was matir. He said what she did was justified. However, he did not allow her to go back to her husband. So what she did, she could be praised for. She saved a number of Jewish lives, but she couldn't go back to her husband. The Rambam in his Perush on Megillas Esther also uses the word Lahatzolas Yisrael, to save Yisrael. And there's a similar expression in my Rami Rosenberg Seminine base. However, the Nodi Behuda is arguing with the Shvus Yaakov. The Nodi Behuda, Rabbi Cheskel Landau, apparently all Landaus are descended from him, and there's one Landau in this shul. In his Madurat Tanim in Yerida Kuf Samach Aleph, he says, no, this can't be right. he addresses the question. Well, if we look at this whole issue to save lives, Eina Torah, this is not Torah. That it should be allowed for an Eishasish to do Zanus Barotso willingly and not forced. This is not straight in my eyes what I've seen in Eza Teshuvah, in some Teshuvah. Either he didn't want to quote specifically the Shulchan Aruch, or he says, well, actually, I'm in the way at the moment in some village and I don't have the Teshuvah in front of me. But he says, this is not right. If Anoshim, Anoshim, Holka Baderech, and some bandits come along with armory and they're threatening to kill everybody, and one woman voluntarily puts herself out, he says, I do not agree with this. He says, this is Yarag Vayavar. So the question is, what about Esther? So he says, look, it says, so there's no compromise to be made. But Esther was called Anusa, Karka Olomhi, and nevertheless, and it was the whole of this Torah, Mehodu Vaz Kush, and therefore you can't learn out a group of Yechidim, he says a number of individuals, you can't learn out the story of Esther from that. And with Esther, she did it really with Mordechai's instruction. So as you said, a Mordechai's instruction, that's the Beis Din. And many say, Ruach HaKodesh. So she did it on the instruction of Beis Din and Ruach HaKodesh. Well, if you've got a few individuals on a TO, it's not the same thing. So according to the Noda Behuda, he is not so massive. Not happy about it. And there were some poskim who followed the Noda Behuda at the time of the Nazis, Yirach Shemom, when the problem came up about whether women could be compromising themselves in order to save some Jewish lives. But Rav Kahana Shapira of Kovno, he allowed women to be compromising in the face of the Nazis, because he says the Nazis were there to kill the whole Jewish people. And since the Nazis' objective was to kill all Klal Yisrael, the Rav Kahana Shapira of Kovno equated the issues facing the Nazis with Queen Esther and set aside the Noda Behuda. And this was similar to a din which was said by the Chazon Ish in Yeridei Hilchos Avodah Zarah Siman Samech Tes, where he discussed diverting an arrow. Where if an arrow was, or grenade you might say, is coming towards a lot of people, and you can divert it, and it will only hit a smaller number of people. Now, Me'ikah Din, you mustn't do a Ma'aseh Be'odayim. You can't do anything which kills Yidden. But in this case, the Chazon Ish was matir, that the arrow can be diverted if less Jews would be killed. And this was what the issue of surrounded. And he suggests that the Rav of Kovno even followed the Noda Behuda, because the Noda Behuda was machmir. But because the Noda Behuda was matir Queen Esther, and this was all Klal Yisrael, since the Nazis sought to destroy all Klal Yisrael, therefore it was okay. So the question is, do we say in the state of Israel that it's called Hatzalas Rabim, or do we say it's not the whole of the Jewish people? Because most of the Jewish people in the world are still in the Gola, Europe, America, elsewhere, although statistically I think the numbers in Israel are getting larger than in the Chutz Laaretz. But the question which Rav Ari Shavat puts is, do we say that the Mossad can operate as though it's for all Klal Yisrael, Queen Esther or Yael examples, or do we say it's Hatzalas Rabin, that it's a large number of people and therefore sufficient to justify, or do we say no, it's not all Klal Yisrael and therefore it can't be allowed? And he quotes the Sefer Mishpat Kohen Shimon Lamed Vov, written by Rav Kook. Rav Kook was the first chief rabbi of Israel before the state was founded. Seemingly, a lot of Haimashi don't like quoting Rav Kook for some reason. Maybe they regard him as too left-wing. But what they don't realize is that Rav Kook was very uncompromising when it came to halacha. What they don't realize is that Rav Kook refused to accept any salary whatsoever from the secular Jews in order that he is not impeded in any psak that he gives, and he should not be influenced by any psak that he gives. And he would rather live in poverty than take money from the Jews who are not Shomrei Torah Mitzvos. So Rav Kook writes about what is kahal, what is a community of Jews when it comes to the subject of Eretz Yisrael? He quotes a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim Beis in chapter 7, verse 8, which implies that when you've got a kahal in Eretz Yisrael, that is called a very significant number of Jewish people. And he makes a distinction between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz. Where if there are other countries and you don't have the majority of Jews, then you won't be so lenient. And he quotes from a Rabbeinu Tam, from a Rif in Brochus, Ches Aleph, where the din of Hallel is fixed. On what grounds? When you have Hallel to praise Hashem for a miracle, it's really for all Klal Yisrael. But we find the Hallel was fixed for Hanukkah. It wasn't for all Klal Yisrael. In fact, most of the Jews were living in Babel at the time. And therefore, why do we say Hallel for Hanukkah? When you don't have Hallel and you want to praise Hashem for an ace, you bet Shkoyimu. That's the way you do it. You don't say Hallel. But when it's something which affects Eretz Yisrael, I'm not going to get drawn now into debates about Yom HaTzmaut, but the idea of Hallel being fixed for Hanukkah was that on Hanukkah, although most Jewish people were still in Bavel, nevertheless, because it was Eretz Yisrael and a very sizable part of the Jews, therefore we have Hallel. So he says, from this we understand that we treat the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael as Klal Yisrael, even though it's not all Klal Yisrael. From Bamidbar, chapter 10, L'chisavo milchama ba'artzachem, stressing the idea of Eretz Yisrael. The Eretz Yisrael is considered like all Klal Yisrael. Rav Shabbat also brings down another Gemara in Tanis Yud Ches. And there, it's talking about giving up one's lives to save others. Pappus and Luliness were surrendering their lives to save the town of Lod. And even though they weren't in themselves in the Gezeira, it was called Hatzalat Yisrael. Just one city of Lod, and this is brought down by Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Tshuva Sigris Moshe, Yerodeo, Chelek Beisim, and Kufay Dalud, that even though there was just one city, and this one city wasn't even all of Eretz Yisrael, they were willing to surrender themselves to save their lives, and they were praised for doing so. You might ask, why is it, and this is in fact a question of the Noda Behuda, why didn't Mordechai HaYehudi give a divorce to Esther before she went into the palace? Surely then she wouldn't have been an Eishes Ish. Maybe he did give a divorce, but we weren't told. He does bring some source to say that he did something in writing, but there was a problem about doing something for Fahesia and the implications of it, how the news would reach the king. You need Aiden when it comes to a divorce, or if she marries him afterwards, then you'll need Aiden for that. And then it's a divorce for Fahesia, it will insult the monarchy. Those are the issues, but the question really remains unanswered. It would have been simple enough for Mordechai to give a divorce, and then she wouldn't have had a din of Eishes Ish. He then turns to another question as, do then you need a Ruach HaKodesh or Beis Din like you did in the case of Esther, although we remember we didn't in the case of Yoel. And he brings actually a Gemara in Megillah Tesvon, which says, Vayi bayam ashlishi vatubash Esther Malchus, Big Day Malchus Mibayle. What does it mean that she needed Big Day Malchus? Obviously she was the queen. Why does it have to say in the pasuk that she dressed herself with royal clothes? She didn't walk around in a sweater or t-shirt. Malamed shalav l'sham Ruach HaKodesh. The Chazal Darshan, because she was dressing herself with Ruach HaKodesh, Hashem gave her that special gift. And she had Ruach HaKodesh to do what she was doing. And says the Maharik in Kustam, that was a basis for her action, because she had that special Ruach HaKodesh to guide her. So the Noda Behuda relies on that. You see, he says you either need Beis Din or Ruach HaKodesh. But I've got a problem with the Noda Behuda, because he doesn't address the question of Yoel. He relies on the fact of Esther having Beis Din Ruach HaKodesh, but he doesn't address the question of Yoel, who killed Sisera without the Beis Din or Ruach HaKodesh. And it's clear from the words of Chazal that what Yoel did was right, even without that. And she did it voluntarily and willingly with Baratzon, without being forced. So the Shmos Yaakov attitude is, well, that was Hatzalas Rabin. And with Yoel, it was called Klal Yisrael. So it seems from that you don't don't need to have to rely on Ruach HaKodesh or Beis Din. Besides, if you want to ask a Shaila first, you want to ask a Beis Din, then it will bring around delays. There's no opportunity in times like this, you know, when death is at the door, so to speak. You can't go and ask Shailas. It's the same like in Hilchos Shabbos, when there's a fire or something. You don't start looking up in the Mishnah Berurah what you do. You don't even go to the Rav's house. You do what you think is necessary to save lives. Rambam, Perek Beis, Hilchos Shabbos, Hanukha Gimel. So the Mishnah Kohen in Shintes writes, you only need a Beis Din for individuals. When it's a Yochid, that's something which has the Shaila. When you're talking like in a Roya Shvi, Hastomim, Avedazora, also groups, also one small community. But La Tzolos Klal Yisrael, ain't sorry, Haros Beis Din. You don't need a Beis Din for saving Klal Yisrael, you just act. There is another question, which we won't go into too much detail, but the relationship with Achashverosh and the relationship with Sisra was that they were not Jewish. And you may ask, well, maybe there's a difference, because Mordechai Vanunu, although he claims not to be Jewish, he is Jewish. And so the whole heter of Esther and Kakaolomhi and Yoel, even Barotho, was that they were not Jewish men. And then there may be a difference. In fact, this is inferred by the Gemara, because the Gemara doesn't ask for Esther Gila Royos Habe. The Gemara doesn't ask, wasn't Esther indulging in Gila Royos? The question of the Gemara was, why Esther Tzahesia Habe? She was doing it publicly, going living in the palace in front of everybody. Everyone knew. And so it's implied from that that it wasn't such a problem. And Rav Shabbat brings down a Rabbeinu Tam and Tosfos in Ksuvas Daf Gimel, Dein Chayavin Misa Al Bilas Nochri. That it's not so problematic with a Nochri. But the Beis Yosef brings down, and the Ramah follows him, and Ebenezer Kufayin Ches, that most Poskim argue with Rabbeinu Tam that there's no difference between a Nochri and a Yehudi. And therefore, it's academic, the Shaila. The Rambam does write in Yesodei HaTorah Perek Hei Halacha Beis, saying that there would not be a Gila Rose if she would have been unmarried, but only if she would have been married. B'shas Pikuach Nefesh, that there is a distinction made between married and unmarried if there'd be Gila Rose with a Nochri. There is also another question. In the case of Esther and in the case of Yoel, this was an immediate panic. This was an emergency. With Esther, there was a decree of Haman Yirach Shemo to do away with the whole Jewish people. With Yael as well, Sisra wanting to get rid of all the Jews. But here, the question we've asked about the Mossad spies is, it's more of a, is it avoiding a future problem? It's not that all the Jews were imminently going to be attacked just because Mordechai Vanunu goes to the Sunday Times and reveals to them Israel's state secrets about nuclear weapons. It's not an immediate problem. Esther and Yael were imminent threats. So what is the situation there? So Rav Yaakov Emden, in his Perush on Nozich Chaf Gimel, he says that when it came to the story of Yoel, she was not forced like Esther, but with Yoel, it wasn't necessarily such an imminent danger for Klal Yisrael, but it was a future danger. Although you could say that he was out to kill everybody, the danger wasn't immediately there on the ground at that moment. And if we return to the subject of being allowed back to the husband, there is a bit of an argument about this as well. We had that Rashi who said that Esther found that as it was Barot, and she could no longer go back to her husband. And there seems to be an argument between the Shvus Yaakov and the Beis Yaakov. Shvus Yaakov says no, Beis Yaakov says less, relying on a Rambam in his Perush on the Megillah, because mitoch kavona she anusa, on the basis that she was generally feeling as though she was forced, and that mitoch onus osa hashmad, that there was this general decree to kill all the Jews, that in itself created onus, the idea of being forced, even though she wasn't physically forced every moment of time. Shehi nichnasa letovas klal Yisrael, that she was doing this for the good of the Jewish people, not that she was doing it for any of her benefit. She'oz lo hayo b'chait, there was no sin therefore. She'ein ze baratzen, that generally speaking, it's not called baratzen. La'tzol Yisrael hutalozeh. So the whole background created an onus, and therefore she's allowed to go back to her husband. So although we had this drasha in the Gemara that she were saying that I can't really come back to you. Whether that's correct, the halacha, you know, that was a drosha, that was agoda, says the Lord of Yehuda. Are we darshining from agoda into halacha? That's another subject of its own. But even Yoel, says the Meiri, even though she invited him into a tent, she is regarded as anusa by the Meiri. She is regarded as forced. Why? Because it was to save the Jewish people, implying that it's okay to return to one's husband afterwards. And the Rambam, it seems that there's no concern that she was willing. In Perek Yud Ches, Halacha Lamed, or Hilchos Surei Biyah, the only concern of the Gemara is really if she's married to a Kohen. If she comes back afterwards, then it's a problem if her husband is a Kohen, because she's been with another man. But otherwise, if she was forced, it would be okay.
The Kohen, even if she's forced, is forbidden
to her. So it seems, yeah. Yosef and Ramon, Ebenezer Zion, saying there's no concern if she would have given it, if it was a Yisrael. But with a Kohen, yes, there is a problem. So Rabbi Ephraim Oshri, in his Shalas Shuas Mimamachim Chayla Al Chazayin, talks about the women who were being used by the Nazis, Yerach Shimon, and whether they could return to their husbands. They had some nickname for these women. I think they called them field workers or something. So the Nazis were forcing these Jewish women to be there on the sidelines, ready for them. They were forced. So he writes that they were okay to return to their husbands. The Ramah does not distinguish between married and unmarried when it comes to Gil Aros with a non-Jew, but the Shach does distinguish. He says only if they're unmarried, it's not Gil Aros, and that was the view of the Rambam we expressed earlier. So we spoke about whether there's a Sofek, maybe it's a future event, if Mordechai Benunu gives up more state secrets and it endangers us, and we know that Iran wants a nuclear weapon and so on and so forth. So is it called a Sofek or is it called a Vadai? If it's a Sofek, is this honey trap justified? With Esther and Yael, there was no Sofek. It's a very strange teshuvah brought by Rav Shavatz from the Binyan Sion, Simon Kufnan Dalad and Kufnan Hay, Rav Yaakov Etlinger. And he talks about a woman who was a Yiras Shemayim, a very firm lady, and somebody comes to her door and says, he's Eliyahu HaNavi. He introduces himself. I don't know if he shows some identity card. But he identifies himself as Eliyahu HaNavi. And he says to her, you know, if we liaise together, we will produce the Mashiach. And this stupid woman believes him. So she's a Yiras Shemayim, but she's terribly naive. I mean, for goodness sake, she couldn't have had much brain between her ears to believe this guy who comes to her door and says, I'm Eliyahu HaNavi. And she even goes to her husband and says, listen, is it okay? Eliyahu HaNavi says we can produce Mashiach. Do you give me your permission? Well, this husband of hers is also pots, because he agrees. I mean, I know what I'd do if my wife would ask me such a question, but I don't think my wife would be so naive. Anyway, he says that as she had no illicit intention, and as she was sincerely convinced and compelled to believe that this was Eliyahu HaNavi and Mashiach would come from this, and therefore it would not be called Gil Aroyos, he says, okay, she can return to her husband, but he makes one proviso. He says, oh, this is a very dodgy psak. I would like you to get the psak from two other rabbanim as well before you go back to your husband. Amazing question. An amazing tshuva. I mean, the Shono Meshiv writes about this in Chelek Gimel, Mem Ches, and the Adelozor in Kuftes, and they strongly disagree with Rav Etlinger, and they say, no way. If she's so naive and so stupid, we can't help, but she's certainly not in danger if some idiot with a long beard comes to the door and says, hey, he's Eliyahu HaNavi. There's no danger whatsoever, even to a Yochid. This is not for Hatzolos Klal Yisrael. You know, there, before we were talking about saving lives, saving many lives, saving the whole of Klal Yisrael. And here there's this idiot who comes to the door and says he's the Eliyahu HaNavi, and just because there's no illicit intention, that should allow her to go back to her husband. No way, she can't go back to him. And there was an Issa Eishes Ish.
She would have been thinking that, like, so the Mashiach would be Hatzolos.
Well, I mean, so what? She, so what? confidence in him.
No,
you know,
he's right. He's right.
A different story, because with Tamar, she felt she deserved a yibum. That because
did she do Mashiach was coming?
No, she may have had the foresight that Mashiach would come from this, but that was halakhically what she was doing was she earnestly and sincerely felt that Yehuda was wrong to send her home, because after the death of Yehuda's sons, wife, and so she sincerely felt that she was entitled to Yehuda under the rules of Yibum. And
Shayla.
That's right.
And Yehuda then agreed.
And Yehuda, he thought that she was simply a zonah, but she
said, well,
for him, him is another question. But as far as she was concerned, she had the Shem Shemayim intentions completely, because she felt she deserved the yibum, and therefore she dressed up and got it. So, and there's another interesting subject. The Malchus Yisrael comes from this union, just like it comes from Ruth, who was a Gioris, and you know, this is a very choshev azach. We once discussed in the subject of Rus about tricking the Sotan and other things, but we won't go into that now. It's a real tangent. But that was not something which was to save any life, obviously. But she felt she deserved the yibum, so she did it to Shem Shemayim. And she was not a married woman. Right? Here we're talking on the Rav Yaakov Edinger about an Eishes Ish. It's a big difference between a woman who's not married and a woman who is. A woman who is married, she's punishable by the death penalty. Even if we don't exercise that nowadays. Anyway, another question of Rav Shlomo Etlinger in Chochmas Shlomo, Eben or Ezer, Kufayin Ches, why was Esther forbidden to return if she was indeed forced? V'chashe Ovadati, Ovadati. And his reaction to that is that there is no salvation from actual intimacy, and therefore she is not allowed to go back to her husband. And that was his view. Whereas Yoel, there was something direct. What does that mean? The actual killing of Sisera was something direct against an enemy who was already on the way to kill Jews. So Yael's action in killing Sisera, he says, was fully justified. Whereas Esther, although she was doing this to save Klal Yisrael, her actual entry into the palace and being intimate with Ahasuerus wasn't directly saving the Jews. It wasn't a direct threat, because the Jews could fight back and we could plead for mercy and we could...
No, there was no threat to the Jews. He wanted to marry her.
He wanted to marry her. People were not actually on the battlefield going out yet to kill Jews. Yeah, although Haman wanted his Gezerah and next...
That was later.
Yeah, okay. Before Makkah and so on. But halakhically, there was no direct threat to Jews at that time. And therefore, his view is, she could not go back to her husband, whereas Yoel could, because there was a direct thing about Jews about to be killed. So we've discussed some what might be controversial issues here. Hopefully, halakhically, these questions should not really meet our way, but it's the Hagdol Torah idea to understand how halacha works within this framework.
Yes. Cindy married.
Cindy, in fact, was married for about a year or so. Her married name is Cheryl Bentop, but her maiden name was Hanin, and she referred to be called Hanin by her maiden name. Apparently she got married about a year or so before to an Israeli general in the army. They own a house in Kochav Yair, but they now live actually in California, in Orlando. And when the press try to get in touch with them and interview them, they just put the phone down. They just don't want to talk. So she was a married woman. But according to the official story, she did not sleep with Vanunu. She flirted with him and said to him that she feels uncomfortable in London, where she's a stranger and she was just on holiday, and she'd be much more cozy to be intimate in her sister's flat in Italy
and would he like to come with? He was even warned by a journalist from the Sunday Times that she could be a spy out to lure him away, and he said, no, that can't be. She's anti-Israel, and she's all right. She's okay. She's an American, and off he went with her. So, in that respect, she was not intimate with him. But when the Shiloh comes up about spying, and it's CIA and MI5 and MI6 and Mossad, it's a halakhic question to save Jewish lives. How far can one go? And it was the story of Cindy which triggered it off. But it seems as though although she was married, it wasn't an intimate setting. We don't know if he gave her a get beforehand, but the conclusion of Rav Shabbat in his whole epistle is that ideally, if this happens, the man should give his wife a get. He can remarry her afterwards, machzik rushoso, unless he's a kohen. Then he can't. And so he says, look, some hold there's no giaros if she is unmarried, if it is a nochri. Rabbeinu Tam is holding even an Eshashish. Hatzolos Rabbim, certainly Kalal Yisrael, certainly Eretz Yisrael, not Befa Hesia. We didn't have time to go into the subject of Gilarot, the Sinai and Befa Hesia, but Esther was definitely Befa Hesia. It was a public thing. Yoel was Betzino. It was not public if he came into her tent. Some hold that she's always Karka Olam, even if she was Barotzo. And this is in contrast to Shri Hasamim and Abarazora. There's no need for a Beis Din or a Hakodesh. We praise Esther, we praise Yael. But as we said, if she's a married woman, she can't return. If she's a divorced woman, she can return, but not even if she's a Kohen. The idea behind this all is to understand that Torah is always in motion. Torah is called halacha. Halacha is related to the word halicha. It's always moving. Whatever problems come up in the modern day, there's always something in halacha which can answer it. And what we've simply addressed is one small part of Israel's security problems by